It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Leaders from around the world are heading to the Steel City as the National Center for Arts and Technology presents its inaugural The Big Idea session this Friday morning at Manchester Bidwell Corporation. Some of the big names showing up are Pitt Chancellor Patrick Gallagher, the City of Pittsburgh's Chief Innovation and Performance Officer Deborah Lamb, and actress, jazz singer, and social activist Gloria Rubin. They'll share their thoughts on how to improve the arts, education, and technology. The public can attend for free. I'm joined now in studio by Paulu Nzambi. He's the Chief Operations Officer for the National Center for Arts and Technology. Paulu Nzambi, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thanks very much.
Our phones are still down today, so you can't call the program with a comment or question, but you can email your comments and questions to us at ESSPGH@WESA.FM. Again, that's ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Paulu Nzambi, what is The Big Idea?
Well, The Big Idea session is a series of short presentations, fast-paced presentations being made from the Manchester Craftsman's Guild stage, all dealing with technology, arts, education, designed to improve the quality of life of people locally and around the world.
And how did you come up, all of you folks at the National Center for Arts and Technology, come up with this idea for The Big Idea? What inspired it?
Well, there are actually three sources of inspiration for The Big Idea session. One, of course, is the iconic work of our founder, Bill Strickland, and his ideas that really form the bedrock of the Manchester Craftsman's Guild, the Bidwell Training Center, and the greenhouse over on the north side. His ideas and philosophies about people being assets, environment influencing behavior, and of course, creativity fueling enterprise. The other source of inspiration was really the extraordinary people that we meet as we travel around the world responding to the call to open centers for arts and technology, which is our principal work.
But this all started here in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely, absolutely. The DNA for these other sites really comes right out of what we have here in Pittsburgh on the north side in the Manchester Bidwell Corporation. And so when we travel around the world, we meet these extraordinary people in the process of bringing these centers online. And oftentimes in our conversations, we realize that they are exposing us to new ways of looking at the world, new ideas, and they have insights that they've gathered from their own experiences. And we always find ourselves saying, wouldn't it be great to be able to share these ideas, these thoughts, these perspectives with others, especially the people back at home in Pittsburgh. So that's really the second source, the extraordinary people that we meet while doing the work of the National Center for Arts and Technology. The third is more philosophical, and it is this principal commitment that we have to democratizing big ideas. You know, ideas are the most personal and powerful things that we have. And anytime somebody takes the stage to share that idea, they're doing something very courageous. What we are really focused on is making sure that these big ideas are exposed to the broadest of audiences, because you really never know when something that is said or something that is heard might inspire a new idea, might galvanize or encourage somebody to pursue an idea that they've always had. And so creating the Big Idea session is really our effort at the democratization of big thought. And that is part of the reason why we made sure that it would be open to the public to reach the broadest possible audience, and also why it's at no cost to the public.
And is there a sense of urgency that you're feeling about improving the arts, education, and technology? Two of those three, the arts and education, seem to be in trouble these days.
Yeah, there are a lot of challenges being faced in the arts and education. I mean, one of the principal concerns of all societies is, are we doing a good job at educating the next generation? With arts, one of the biggest concerns is, will they be around in public education? Are young people going to have the type of access that many of us grew up having just as part of going to school every day? The other reality is, are we able to blend arts and technology effectively to produce new ideas and innovation? And are we creating the type of environments that really foster that kind of innovation?
We talk about the arts being threatened and have discussed it on this show on numerous occasions. Why are the arts being threatened? And I mean, so much of the work that you do is in the arts and with the arts. And yet people, are they not seeing the value of the arts? Is it, why is it that when money is tight, that's the first thing that people look at axing?
I think to some degree, when decisions are made purely financially, the arts are an area where people look to cut because there isn't this dynamic or vocal outcry. I think there's also to some degree an undervaluing of what the arts are really capable of doing. I think on a surface level, to some degree, people think, okay, well, it's nice that, you know, a young child or a person might be able to work with ceramics. It's nice that they might be able to paint. But I think what's missing is really what's beneath the waterline of those activities. And what's beneath the waterline are really things like how young people can learn resilience and perseverance through the artistic process. How can they engage in analytical thinking and problem solving? How they can experience achievement through the process of working through the arts. I think as a society, we are accustomed, for example, to enrolling our young people in athletic programs. Right. And we don't necessarily enroll them because we think that they're going to be the next NBA star, the next NFL star. We enroll them because we fundamentally believe that through this process of engaging in teams and playing sports, they will learn things that will develop their character. Well, the truth is the arts are a great vehicle for doing the exact same thing. But we just typically don't think of the arts in that vein.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Paulu Nzambi. He's the Chief Operations Officer of the National Center for Arts and Technology, and they are putting on the Big Idea Session this Friday morning at Manchester Bidwell Corporation. Paulu, I mentioned some of the speakers. Who are the big names, and why were they chosen?
Well, obviously, the one of the big speakers is the chancellor, the new chancellor for the University of Pittsburgh, Patrick Gallagher. And I think, you know, him having assumed that position, this gives him a great opportunity to sort of expose the Pittsburgh community to some of his big ideas as a person leading that institution. So certainly he was a good person to contact as a presenter. Deborah Lamb, Chief Innovation and Performance Officer here at the City of Pittsburgh. We've seen extraordinary things come out of the City of Pittsburgh in general, the ability to reinvent itself as a city. I think part of that is being seen now in government and people who are willing to try new things and bring new ideas. So hearing from that sector what a future city might look like, what ideas would promote the best kind of city, the best Pittsburgh that we could be, was certainly something that we were interested in finding out. Also, you know, individuals like Darius Quarles, who goes by the moniker of the Million Dollar Scholar. He has an extraordinary personal story, but he has real insight on challenges dealing with young people in foster care and how education, in a sense, saved him, but how this extraordinary network of people also assisted him in becoming successful. So a lot of these people were selected because they had a peculiar insight. Not necessarily related to their direct work, but to some degree related to their experience and just the way they viewed the world.
And they're all being given a limited time to speak. So, you know, these are people who might be used to going out and speaking for an hour or more on a topic, and they're being told to limit it to, what, 10 to 15 minutes? So explain the idea behind this.
Right. So we've asked people to take of their time and essentially be part of the audience to have this experience. One of the things that we're increasingly sensitive to is time is incredibly valuable to people. And what we've said is if you have something important to say, let's see if we can encapsulate it into the shortest amount of time possible. And so let's squeeze out not just the essence of what you mean, but the quintessence of what you mean. And let's share that with the public. The reality is when you get down to about 10 minutes, you have just enough time to tell them exactly what you mean, but you don't have time for a lot of fluff. So you essentially ride the waves of the talk, and then it's over. Because we have so many speakers, there's a total of 12 of them, what we wanted to do is provide enough variety. So the limited time allows us to get through a lot of content in a quick amount of time, but also keep it very dynamic and very engaging. So in the off chance that you might not be thrilled with one of the presentations, the maximum amount of time that you will have to sit through one is probably 10 minutes, and then you'll be on to the next one. And we'll do our best to dazzle you with the next speaker.
did anybody chafe at this idea? Any of these people you invited said, what? How can I possibly encapsulate my ideas in 10 minutes?
Well, I wouldn't say chafe, but they did ask some questions about, you know, how much time do I have and is that enough time? And I think, you know, through this process, we have been able to really tease out the essence of what it is they want to communicate and get that across to people.
And how much of it has to do with the what has been cited as a limited attention span of perhaps just people in general, but certainly the millennial generation, who I'm sure a lot of this is being aimed at, that, you know, if you're more than 15 minutes into something, their eyes start to glaze over and their minds are moving on, whether they're sitting there staring at you or not.
Yeah, well, we definitely wanted to be sensitive to the audience, and we knew that the audience was going to be broad in nature, and sure, it was certainly going to include millennials. And this fast-paced, dynamic, short presentation really does, I think, to some degree, appeal to that generation. But it also appeals to us because we've all been in situations where we're listening to somebody and they're going on and on and on, and there seems no end in sight. And these short presentations that are fast-paced really are sort of a cure for that.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Palu Nzambi, the Chief Operations Officer of the National Center for Arts and Technology. You can join the conversation. We have about 10 minutes left, and you can join the conversation at not our phone number. I almost started to give that out. The phones are down. You can email us at essspgh@wesa.fm, on Twitter at essspgh. And what you were just describing, Paulu, these sound like TED Talks. Was that an inspiration for this event?
Yeah, I think to some degree, TED has inspired a lot of things. It has drawn our attention to the power of ideas, the power of human expression, the power of storytelling, and how we can share as a community some of our most important and valuable principles. And I think to some degree, yeah, TED did inspire this. We've changed the format to some degree. It's a much shorter format than TED. And what we deliberately did is we made sure that we would allow the greatest amount of accessibility to these big ideas by not charging admission. In our effort in sort of promoting the democratization of big thought, one of the principles of the Manchester Bidwell Corporation is that people are assets. And what we wanted to do was make sure that there would be no barriers to entry to as many people who were even remotely interested in hearing what these individuals were interested in sharing with them.
And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the Big Idea Session, which is happening this Friday morning at Manchester Bidwell Corporation with a list of luminaries who are speaking and sharing ideas. Do you have any idea what some of the ideas are, or is it just, you know, whatever these people happen to come up with on that day?
No.
Friday?
They're not coming up with them on the spot.
Well, no, but I mean, are you finding out about them on the spot, or have these been vetted?
They have been vetted, absolutely.
Can you give us a hint at what's coming?
We would owe that to the public, certainly. So they're great talks. Some of them are going to be dealing with things like, I'll just hint at them. Rooftops. There are going to be talks that deal with things like the best thinking, like how to put our best thinking forward in different situations. There'll be individuals talking about lessons that they've learned from voyages and trips that they've taken. There'll be individuals talking about the impact that one singular event had on their life and how creating those kinds of events for others might impact their lives.
Let's talk about some of the history behind the formation of the National Center for Arts and Technology. You mentioned the philosophy behind Manchester Bidwell Corporation and this idea that people are resources, and I'm sure years ago when the Manchester Bidwell Corporation was created, and even today, you look at people being discarded, losing their jobs, being displaced by machinery, and they may well feel or begin to question their worth. And this is about perhaps, if not instilling it, restoring it.
Absolutely. I mean, the fundamental principle of the Manchester Bidwell Corporation is that every human life is valuable, that all people are assets. And part of our job in interacting with people is to help them stay literally on the asset side of the social balance sheet and prevent them from falling on the liability side. And regardless of people's backgrounds, there's a lot of reasons why people get marginalized. I mean, it could be issues with language. It could be issues with economics, poverty, immigrant status. But what we feel is that everybody has something to contribute. And sometimes we make the mistake of not asking people what they are thinking, what's in their heads. And oftentimes what is in their heads, what they're feeling, what they're experiencing are the most valuable things, right? If we understood them a little bit better, if we had a better sense of what their perspective was, we could design solutions that met their needs. We could create institutions, we could create programs that better serve their interests, right? And in so doing, we could make a better society. And so by understanding that, you know, one of our most crucial and important assets are our people, we really put the focus on human beings, right? And in doing that, we can focus in such a way that we can work to improve a better society or produce a better society for people who live there.
So I was going to ask you what the goals of the work are, but it sounds like you just basically summed it up, that it's the idea of finding out what people are thinking. And then once you've ascertained that, how can these people be, how can their skill set best be utilized?
Yeah, I mean, the remarkable thing is people's ideas reside within them. And unless they take the bold and courageous step of sharing that with others, you don't know what's motivating them to action, what's guiding their thought processes, and what ultimately guides, you know, the results that they produce. We are blessed when people agree to share their ideas. Not necessarily because everybody's idea is going to be the world's biggest idea, but because the sharing of ideas liberates us. It gives us the freedom to say, I never thought about that, or that's a different way of understanding that situation. Or, for example, it may galvanize in us a desire to do something that we spend a lot of time talking about but never actually did.
Why isn't there more of a template for that in our society? I mean, here we are in a capitalist society that's all about, you know, coming up with ideas and innovations, and yet so often we don't reach out to people. Now, some people will, whether they're asked or not, they will be forthcoming with their ideas, but oftentimes they're slapped down or rejected before they're really able to explain what's on their mind, because, you know, the idea is, you know, we're in charge, or we have your best interests at heart, and so we're thinking about all this and you don't need to talk about it because we've already got it figured out.
Yeah. Well, I think to some degree it might be, you know, sometimes it might be arrogance or a sense of knowing what somebody else might need rather than asking them and finding out. I think that is oftentimes like a classic error we make. We may study something, we may look at something and say, oh, I know exactly what this group or that person needs. And sometimes we get it right and sometimes we get it horribly wrong. But sometimes the best thing to do is actually ask them what they think before we undertake action on their behalf, even if we believe it's for their benefit. I think things like TED, and I think like the Big Ideas Session, are creating the type of venues where the sharing of ideas, no matter how big or how small, no matter how complex or simple, are valued. I think we are, in some sense, returning to an age gone by where people, as communities, came together. They sat around fires and they told stories. Stories that, you know, imparted knowledge about their past, talked about their aspirations for their future, and encouraged each other, you know, just by sharing a common experience. And I think while there may not be a definitive template to that, we are getting closer and closer at valuing human communication. And these forums, these opportunities where people just get to share what's on their mind, I think are a big step in valuing that.
And how did you come to this work?
It's been quite a journey. I was a trial lawyer for very many years. For 13 years, I was a trial lawyer. And part of my job was to listen intently to people and effectively tell their stories. I was also a poet and playwright and actor. And so as part of that work, I had to listen intently to what people had gone through and then cross stories that were both entertaining, engaging, and oftentimes educational. And I found a real value in the medium of expression. I happen to be a person who loves words. And to me, theater and presentation is sort of the encapsulation of that. And so I come to the work of the National Center for Arts and Technology because somebody literally gave me Bill Strickland's book. I read it. I had the opportunity to meet Bill. And it was an opportunity for me to combine many strands of my life that existed but were never tied together. So it allowed me to use skill sets that I learned practicing law, skill sets that I learned in theater, skill sets that I learned as a poet and playwright and as an artistic person, and skill sets that I developed in entrepreneurial activities that I had been engaged in as well.
We're down to just a couple of minutes here, but we were talking earlier about how the Manchester Bidwell model has, there are other places, other cities around the country, around the world, as well as around the country, that are duplicating this, that are using the Bidwell example. How did this come to their attention, and how do they implement it? Hopefully, I'm leaving you enough time to answer this.
Sure. Well, the National Center for Arts and Technology is a collaborative consultancy, so we literally work with civic leaders nationally and internationally to stand up these centers. And we have a process that begins with a feasibility study. We move into a planning phase. And then finally, we open the doors and they go into an implementation phase. So
they contact you?
They contact us. The National Center works by invitation. So typically, it's a civic leader or a group from a city that approaches us and says, you know what, we've seen what you've got in Pittsburgh. This idea of high-quality youth arts education and demand-driven career training, and we think that has applicability for people in our community. We think it responds to the needs of people in poverty. We think it responds to low academic achievement. We think it responds to the need that they have, that people have, for gainful employment and access to gainful employment. And so we work with them to bring those centers online.
This weekend, again, it's the Big Idea Session. It's happening on Friday morning at the Manchester Bidwell Corporation, and we've been speaking with Palu Nzambi, who is the Chief Operations Officer of the National Center for Arts and Technology. Okay, so now we're really down to about a minute here, which should be enough time for you to run down the list of events, the itinerary for the morning, and I think for other parts of the day and the weekend?
Right. It's actually all morning. It begins at 9 in the morning. We'll have breakfast for you at 8 if you arrive a little early. The first session goes from 9 till 10:30. There's a 30-minute break in between, and then from 11 till 12:30 is the second session. So people like the Chancellor Patrick Gallagher will be there, Deb Lamb, Gloria Rubin, Henry Thorne, the CTO of 4Moms, Bill Jenneret, Urban Innovation 21, Carolina Byers, who runs the Village Theater out in Sewickley, David Motley, we have Darius Quarles, the Million Dollar Scholar, Dror Yaron from CMU's own Create Lab, and plenty of others. You'll enjoy it. Please come out.
Okay, it's the inaugural Big Idea Session this Friday morning at Manchester Bidwell Corporation. We've been talking with the Chief Operations Officer of the National Center for Arts and Technology, Palu Nzambi. And thank you so much for being with us. It sounds fascinating.
Paul, thank you very much for having us.
You are welcome. Coming up, we'll meet a CMU art student who's using his talents to call attention to the issue of homelessness. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.